thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast. From the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal, I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's August 2020, and you're listening to episode 198, which is a conversation about the cancel culture phenomenon. On this episode, I'm joined by Ann Kennedy, who has an MDiv and is the author of Nailed It, 365 Sarcastic Devotions for Angry and Worn Out People. She blogs about current events and theological trends at Preventing Grace on Pathios.com. Anne has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal, and it's called Cancel Culture and the Gospel. Where can you go when the whole world is against you? And you can read her article for free online at our website, equip.org. Anne, it's good to have you on.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, Anne has written, as I mentioned, an online article about cancel culture, which has really, I think, exploded. I mean, it might have been around before, but the proliferation of social media and trying to keep up with all the latest scandals or public shaming of various different people, whether it's ordinary everyday people or celebrities, has kind of reached its zenith probably in this coronavirus time where we're kind of shut in and more aware of stuff than we might normally. And it's kind of almost reached a point of being rather meta because people who canceled other people in the past are now themselves getting canceled. So that might seem like very confusing to some of our listeners. So I would like Anne to talk to us a little bit about what is cancel culture.
Well, I should say too, I was really nervous about writing about it because it is changing so quickly. And so, you know, I just knew that as soon as I pushed send on my piece, it would be obsolete. And I feel like I started reading another book this week that I wish I had read before. So it's something that's shifted and changed a lot, I think, really since January of this year. But in terms of if you just did a Google search, you would basically get the definition that it's the withdrawing of public support for a public figure or a company after they've done something or it's been discovered that they did something in the past that was objectionable or offensive. So it's basically online shaming. It's the practice of shaming and hopefully, I think people would also say shunning. So you could boycott a business or a celebrity. But it's actually bigger than that because it's not just celebrities. You know, Taylor Swift and Kanye have both been canceled, but, you know, they're still part of our national conversation, if that's what you want to call it. But it's become bigger in that ordinary people who are not famous have gotten swept up in the culture of canceling. And so I actually think that it's the business of trying to cancel people who aren't well known, who don't have a platform, that has given it its real power in the last 6 months, I would say, more so than it did in 2019. That was when people thought that cancel culture had peaked in 2019, but we've seen that that's just not true.
Well, it does seem like you said it can touch lives of non-celebrities. I mean, it seems like there's a new celebrity almost every week that something's happening to them. I think by the time people might listen to this in a year from now, they'd be like, oh, that's old news. Oh, I do remember when people were starting to cancel Ellen DeGeneres because of all the controversy from her talk show. And sometimes it surrounds something that maybe somebody was known for, right? Or something comes out about them. Or it could be something that in a moment of non-thinking people did that people want to bring to light. So it is kind of also, I would think it's almost crowdsourced. I mean, everybody just kind of jumps on the bandwagon, whether you know Ellen DeGeneres or not, or famous celebrity, or even anonymous person who's now in the news for something they did. We all have an opinion about that. So where did it come from in the current form where somebody can just, somebody shares an article about somebody and you're like, oh, that person is so terrible. And then you share it and so on.
So the first place that I found it, the earliest is the issue of Justine Sacco. I don't know how to say her last name, Sacco or Sacco, 2013. I think the first modern cancellation that happened was in 2013. She got on an airplane in the U.S. It was bound for South Africa. And she tweeted, "I'm going to Africa. I hope I don't get AIDS. Just kidding. I'm white." And so it was a very tasteless joke. And the flight was 11 hours, I think. By the time she'd gotten off the plane, she had lost her job and basically her life, although she got her life back eventually. But that was, I think, the moment when Twitter in particular learned that it had real power over people. After that, you can see the word canceled, you're canceled. The place that I think that it first happened in that form was on a VH1 show in 2014. And I don't know anybody of these names. I'm not in the hip hop culture at all. But one person said about another person, "You're canceled." And they were kind of joking. But that term kind of took off. And in 2014, 2015, 2016, especially in Black pop culture, the "you're canceled" phrase was used a lot, particularly around celebrities back and forth to each other. But, you know, that's when Twitter was kind of new at that point. And it's discovered that Twitter as a cultural phenomenon has discovered about itself that it has real power over people, and that people do change their behavior based on what a Twitter mob will do. You can lose your employment, you can lose your reputation. It's had a huge impact in academic circles. So some very famous, well-known scientists ended up being, as it were, canceled, and that they lost their job. But at the same time, you know, J.K. Rowling this year, there's a cancellation effort against her that hasn't really panned out because she's so big. So if you're a celebrity and you have a platform and you have a lot of money, of course, a cancellation effort against you isn't going to go very far. In fact, you might do better from it. Your sales might pick up as people feel sorry for you. But if you're not famous and you're canceled, you don't have a lot of recourse. So there's this kind of, well, I'd said it already, there's a dual nature about it that's continuing to unfold and change, I think. And so again, like, this podcast will go out and somebody new will be canceled, and it might work or it might not work. It's helping to sort of tribalize, make the factions that already exist more entrenched in public discourse.
Does cancel culture have any other kind of deeper roots in our society than just its emergence on social media, which, you know, like you said, there's some power to it? And sometimes, like, it's not even somebody's behavior. I remember several years ago, I think it was The Gap debuted a new logo. And I remember Coca-Cola debuted a new logo. And there was such outcry on social media that they put back the old logo after they had spent many tens of millions or thousands of dollars on doing these things. So is there something deeper at work than somebody saying, "I don't like this company," or "I didn't like the behavior of somebody who had some ill-advised tweet," or something of that nature, or "they're not as nice as their persona is"?
I think there's a whole variety. Like, there's the deeper long-term cultural roots of this, which are just very human. You know, if you consider how cultures and how individuals shun each other through time, that's a very human, canceling is a very human thing. So I tried to read a little bit about Puritan shunning, and, you know, the ancient Greeks invented the idea of ostracizing someone. And it was a formal process whereby you would be voted out, basically voted off the island, and then you would leave and you could come back after a certain amount of time and be reintegrated into life. And of course, many people who have written about this liken canceling to what the church does with excommunication, although I would say that that's not a fair comparison. But there is, groups always have had a way of indicating to someone that their behavior and maybe their thought, what they're saying, is completely unacceptable, and then having a way of expelling that person out of the group. So it's just, that's all it is at its core, is shunning or culturally applied shame, so that other people in the group will see that their behavior is wrong, that kind of behavior is wrong, and then they will adjust their behavior accordingly. But I've been reading, in terms of its newer roots, there's a great book, which is old now, The Coddling of the American Mind. And the authors of that, whose names, I can't say their names either, Lukianoff and Haidt, Jonathan,
Yeah, I
anyway.
think it's Jonathan Haidt or something like
Yeah.
that. I don't know.
So they have documented, and I think it's really useful to see how, in terms of American culture, we've had some friends that we've sort of been living with and have been comfortable with, but they've suddenly emerged in kind of a very negative way. And one they've said is the culture of safety, as we've become very affluent in America. Safety is something that we prioritize as a culture, and that certain ideas about safety and what is allowable within a public discourse have jumped over from physical safety to emotional safety. And so they document how a lot of stuff that has happened on campuses since 2015, 16 has kind of mainstreamed on social media. And I think a lot of the cancel culture has risen up out of that. How somebody behaves, even in the past, is up for public review right now. So it's kind of you have to have had a pure life and pure thoughts for your whole life and not have offended the culture at this moment. Otherwise, you stand to be canceled. And it's a pretty dangerous, I would say, thing that we're in the middle of, phenomenon, but it's not unusual because we have a lot of unease going on politically and culturally. And so the fact that this is a way that we are culturally dealing with people's past sins and current sins is actually very normal for a society to do what it is that we're doing right now. Many societies around the world have done this kind of effort of purity. You can see that I'm grasping for words because how you describe it is both anthropological and sociological and theological. And as I've read about it, words have utterly failed me.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Anne Kennedy. She has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal, and her article can be read for free online at our website, equip.org. Anne's article is called "Cancel Culture and the Gospel: Where Can You Go When the Whole World Is Against You?" And if you are enjoying some of these theological evaluations of various different cultural phenomenons and teachers that Anne does for us, please help us to continue this podcast by supporting us in the most important way that you can, which is to give us a review and a rating, particularly at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. If you go to Apple Podcasts, you can just search for Postmodern Realities and you will get this podcast. And as I said last episode, we only have 37 ratings, but thousands of downloads every single month. And so we are just hoping that a few more people out of those thousands will give us some ratings because that's how computer algorithms work. The more people that rate and review us, the higher this will come up when people are searching for content like this. And we would like to have more people interacting with our content and subscribing to this podcast. As a matter of fact, someone just this month actually gave us a review that focuses on having Anne as a guest. So we got a 5-star review from someone who said, "Thank you for your work. I love your interviews and book reviews with Anne Kennedy." So we'd like to keep Anne coming onto this podcast, and we'd really appreciate it if you help us out in that way. You can also subscribe to the journal easily at equip.org. And there, if you want to, if you don't have some money in your budget right now for a full subscription, please consider giving us a tip, just $3, $5, something like that. You can do that at any of the landing pages for this podcast where you can see all of them. We're up to almost 200 episodes, and that's a lot of content that's there at our website, equip.org. Just go to magazine at the scroll down. The second choice is Postmodern Realities. Click on that, and at any landing page, you will find a link where you can give us a tip. So thank you for all the ways that you support our content, and most importantly, tell a friend about this podcast, and thank you. This phenomenon of cancel culture, does it have any specific generational kind of shifts? I mean, in other words, is it perceived differently from the different generations, whether it's baby boomers or millennials or Gen X people, as they respond to or even participate in cancel culture?
I think it's very generational, and I think it's catching a lot of people off guard for that reason. So one of the interesting things about it was that President Obama last year in 2019 spoke out against what he called call-out culture, which is essentially cancel culture. And he said, you know, we've got to be able to live together and have different kinds of ideas. And that's just what public discourse is. It's a free society. And he wasn't canceled for saying that. But the response to him, and this shows my own generation, I felt like was very disrespectful. In the New York Times, somebody wrote a piece. It was basically a millennial type person saying to a boomer, "Okay, boomer," which is this dismissive, "You don't understand what's going on. You just need to not talk about this," kind of catchphrase. And I do think that's really interesting because it's caught within the academic world, you know, the progeneration of professors and so on that's, you know, established and who went along believing in certain liberal ideas about speech are now finding a generation of younger people who don't want that and are not interested and who are, they want both safety for themselves and their ideas, but also a purity of culture that no one had probably wanted in the last 100 years. So there's a new desire, and I do think generationally different aged people don't know how to relate to each other as a part of this. And also I think people get swept up in it. So I've seen different cancellation efforts happen online. Older people will be quick to sort of line up to cancel, you know, younger people. It shows the deep rifts politically and ideologically between the different groups within America today. So yeah, that's one of the interesting things about it. I know J.K. Rowling is a little bit older, but she spoke to a generation of younger people in a powerful way. She, though, hasn't, her ideas are not proper for what is happening right now. And so, you know, her beloved fans have now turned on her. And so that's it's deeply uncomfortable place that I think a lot of older people are navigating or not navigating, as the case may be.
And is bringing up some issues with regard to speech on campus and those kinds of things. And I just wanted our listeners to know it's been a couple of years, but way back when on episode 42, we have an episode called When Freedom of Expression and Emotions Collide on Campus. And there's a accompanying article, and you can find links in the show notes of this episode to that article and that podcast if you're interested in digging a little bit deeper on the subject. But I do want to ask Anne about that, just the idea of, which we covered in that article, freedom of speech and the freedom of expression, because now you're finding not just on the college campus, but in the workplace or other places where the idea of, like you were talking about, safe spaces or trigger warnings or certain subjects that you can't talk to fellow employees about or just whatever it may be. It's a different approach, I think, than older generations experience with this idea of free speech. In other words, people can express things that you don't agree with. But the point of cancel culture, it seems to me, is there are certain generations that are saying, these are the values that we have. And so if you don't agree with these values, then we will cancel you.
Right. It's a huge shift, I think, for our society to undergo. And I guess I'm curious about how long lasting it will be. But so one way that you can sort of explore this is to look at the Harper's Magazine, A Letter on Justice and Open Debate, that came out in July. And a group put together a pretty short statement in defense of free speech, that people should be allowed to say whatever they want without fear of losing their job, their livelihoods in particular, that there should be open conversation and debate about very, very important issues of our time. And it was signed by a lot of people. And the next morning, I guess I probably don't have the timeline exactly right, but the pushback was loud and quick, and such that some people tried to hedge and explain their signing of this letter. And it's really curious because your previous life has to have been perfect. Your thoughts and speech now have to have been perfect. And the standard by which you're measured changes almost every day. So what's allowable is constantly changing. A lot of people have noticed that it's a little bit like the reign of terror in the French. Although we don't have actual violence, you can be part of something and think that it's okay, and then you can be devoured by that same movement that's happening more and more. And so it started on campuses and I think caught people really off guard, but now it's come into the main, you know, the culture. And unless you're offline and you have no place on the internet and no one can ever take a video of you, that would be the only way to be safe from this kind of cultural phenomenon.
Well, speaking of that, you know, social media was not around, I'd say 15 years ago, and or it's just beginning, you know, it wasn't something that people interacted with every day. So we just talked about, you know, generational use or understanding and deployment of cancel culture. So how does the use of social media relate to this, and especially relate to people in power and what they would term, quote, speaking truth to power? Because is there anything good about cancel culture in that it would bring to light, in some instances, horrific behaviors of people that are truly, you know, appalling and maybe even evil things they've done to others, and then suddenly their power is stripped from them? I'm thinking of Harvey Weinstein. And then the other thing is, what about this new power that the average person has, like you said, taking a video? I mean, basically, anyone can video anybody right now. Then that didn't exist before the invention of the iPhone in 2007.
Right. It's so fast. I think that's what's amazing about it. But it is very, very related to social media. So if you read anybody talking about cancel culture, they'll say to have access to social media is in itself a power that was heretofore not available to ordinary people. So small, unknown people can cancel or change the realities of very powerful people based on their Twitter accounts, but also their iPhone. I mean, in some ways, it's everybody with an iPhone and a camera, you do have a certain kind of safety for yourself. I have a friend who was being harassed by her neighbors, and she didn't even film. She just held up her phone, and the other person changed his behavior immediately. So, you know, you can just wave your phone around and somebody will stop doing whatever bad thing it is that they're doing. Maybe not all the time, but that she found that was really a unique thing she had never experienced before. So yeah, if you have a social media account, you do have a new kind of power that I think maybe was associated with the free press before. So it's the change that it's making to our culture is astonishing, and it's swift. And I think in some, you know, it's true, in some cases, it's good. So the Me Too movement wouldn't have been possible in the 90s. You'd have to get an interview on a established news channel or get a piece published in a paper, but not everybody read the paper back then. But I think just like any kind of power, there's not a lot of thought about how it is that it's used. And so I think that's why we're seeing it spin and change so quickly, because a pure democracy isn't a really good thing. When everybody has a voice that's equal to everybody else's voice and has power over everybody else, you get chaos. You don't get order. So yeah, it's social media related. And the good that it has is kind of, I would say, getting to be smaller every day.
How should Christians think about cancel culture? You know, you mentioned earlier in this episode that some people have likened cancel culture to church discipline and excommunication, for example, of people in unrepentant sin. Now, not all Protestant churches practice excommunication. We do in my tradition, but there's some others that don't have more formal structures of church governments, so forth. So is there a difference between cancel culture and maintaining, you know, the peace and the biblical foundation of the church as it relates to church discipline and dealing with situations where there is, you know, serious sin that's unrepentant?
If you look at it from the outside, it may look, and perhaps people might even experience it as if it was as a very similar thing. And also, I should say that there's a difference between the way that churches should live and be, and then, of course, the way the churches do or are. So, of course, people within the church sin. And so I do know, of course, churches throughout history have gone through the practice of shunning. And of course, for the Amish, it's an institutional practice. But what the scripture outlines as excommunication isn't cancel culture. However, the people who are inside it may experience it. It's not technically the same thing. And that's because the purpose of excommunicating somebody from the body, the visible body, is for their own salvation. You put somebody out of the body when they are unrepentant of a sin that's objectively defined by the scripture. So the congregation isn't getting together and deciding if somebody's overstepped the bounds of everybody else's feelings and how they think that person should live. It's only for things that are delineated in scripture to be actual sin, and only when that sin is unrepented of. And then for most churches like mine, even then, the person would be allowed to attend church. And this was true for the Puritans as well. That person could attend church. They were just excommunicated. They were not allowed to receive communion. They couldn't come and receive the bread and wine. But in our church, if you've been put away from the table, you still can come forward for a blessing. You know, some people in our church have had trouble letting go of certain sins or trouble feeling sorry about it and have removed themselves from the table for a while as they try to work that out, but have remained close to the church with the goal of being brought back into communion. So it's for a purpose, which is the restoration of the person who is a sinner. And of course, everyone is a sinner. So Christians aren't allowed either to do the sort of tribal factions. Everyone is in the same boat of being wrong. And the only way to be put out is if you are unwilling to acknowledge that you are wrong. There's only two kinds of people. So excommunication isn't the same thing as cancel culture at all. Cancel culture has no end in sight so far. There's no way for people to be rehabilitated or brought back into the grace of the wider, you know, communion of American culture. You are put out, and so you'll find that, you know, people who are canceled are finding each other and creating new community apart from the larger conversation. It's this sort of endless fracturing rather than having a restoration and being brought back in. And the purpose, the point of excommunication is so important, is because it does matter how a community of people behave and what they say. It's not like those things aren't important. I don't think the church is full of free speech, perhaps, although, you know, it's full of free sinners. So the categories don't perfectly align. So I'd just be really wary as people are on the internet, if you run into ideas that church shunning or excommunication are the same as cancel culture, it really isn't. There are important distinctions that should be maintained as we think and read about this.
Earlier, you were talking about cancel culture and purity. In other words, in order to avoid the possibility of ever being canceled on social media, you've had to live a pure life and pure thoughts and never done anything that you regret, especially that now could, in the last 10 years, could have possibly been filmed. So what's the difference between this idea of purity and one of goodness in terms of interacting with other people or viewing others? I mean, how do Christians grapple with how to respond in cancel culture, especially if they see something like, oh, this person, this national figure or this pop culture figure shouldn't have done X, Y, and Z. And I want to comment on that. Should that be something we're doing?
I came across this distinction in an article, which I subsequently couldn't find again, but I really liked it, the difference between purity and goodness. So when a culture starts sliding towards the idea of purity, which has happened within the church as well at certain points, within the larger church, when you're sliding towards purity, and that is a culturally defined ideal, you're going to end up with a lot of people canceled or a lot of people put out of the visible body of whatever it is that you're talking about. Goodness allows for frailty, allows for human frailty. You can do good even if you are a bad person. You can act in goodness towards other people. You can be gracious to them. You can forgive them. You can absorb some of the hurt that they give to you in goodness without you yourself being pure. I think it's just a really helpful distinction to make, especially for Christians, because of course we are called to be pure and holy, but that's God's designation. That's something that he gives his people. He enacts. We ourselves are not inherently pure. We can't be sinless. We need the help of the gospel. We need God's purity and goodness in our lives in order to become good and holy. And so I think it's really helpful if you're online and you're wondering about this and you see somebody doing something terrible to stop and ask what would be the good thing to do. What would be good for that person, for other people, you know? So in other words, I think it would be fine to call out people for bad, wicked behavior, for instance, in the Me Too movement. But then you'd have to step back and have a more nuanced view. You don't want to alienate thousands of people in a culture and have no way for them to come back in or be part of the family of humanity. You're going to pause a little bit and you're going to consider your own stance towards other people if you think in terms of goodness rather than purity.
Are there any biblical reasons that Christians would cancel someone? I mean, how should they, you know, move through this whole phenomenon? Because if we're honest, we see people on social media who are Christians canceling people.
I've seen that and I've gotten into tussles with people about it myself. As I think the church has become more political in the last 4 years, it's really easy to cut people off. And especially with the unfollow button, you can actually, for all practical purposes, cancel somebody in a personal way in your own life. And just, you know, it's as if they're dead to you. In some ways, that's a sane option, because if you're seeing everything that everybody's saying in the entire world, you're experiencing everybody else's craziness all the time, you yourself are going to probably spiral into some bad place. So that's why I use my mute button on social media. I mute people for a certain amount of time and then I go check back in. There's no reason to cancel anyone. I'd say even in the Me Too movement, when powerful men were being called to account for behavior that was absolutely unacceptable and for ruining people's lives, even then, I would have said that that's not canceling, even if they lost their jobs and their livelihood, which in many cases was appropriate. Those people should still be considered within the human family. They are people who need to hear the gospel. They're people who need to be told about the forgiveness and love of Jesus. In fact, forgiveness is such a foundational part of the Christian life. I think it's one reason why we have had such an open society in the West for so long, because forgiveness is embedded in the DNA of our intellectual life. To throw that away is a deeply unchristian thing to do. And I don't think that Christians should engage in cancel culture. They should make clear distinctions about the categories that they're using when they call out other people's behavior or beliefs.
So sometimes we think of people who we don't agree with very vigorously on a certain particular issue, which is like you said, in the last 4 years, unfortunately, things have become more politicized just generally. And it doesn't even have to be, you know, about politics in general. I mean, people have strong opinions now because of tribes on anything. I mean, you can just, you know, whether it's theological or your favorite hobby or, I don't know, whatever it is that you are interested in, it seems to be there's these two very different vocal differences of opinions that people are always debating sides. So if we sometimes look at somebody on the other side as an enemy of ours, how do we work through that as Christians where Christ calls us to love our enemies? I mean, how does that work in this cancel culture? Because it was recently, maybe you saw this too, there was like some survey that they did, like, have you cut off family ties with people you don't agree with politically? And they interviewed people and they said, oh yeah, if people don't agree with me politically in my family, I have literally canceled them. I no longer even speak to them. I won't go to gatherings that they're at. So if we even think of that, people we have strong feelings with, we might disagree with, how do we quote unquote love our enemies in this particular kind of season of all this social media cancellations? Like you said, you can like unfollow your family members now.
Yeah, I sort of stumbled on this in my own life recently, and it helped me out of a hole that I was in because I did want to sort of cut somebody off. It's not that I wanted to cut them off. I just was so irritated by them all the time. I thought, you know, I just can't deal. And then, I mean, one thing Christians can do in a habitual way, which I recommend highly, I tried it even myself recently, was to just crack open ye old Bible and especially read the Psalms and read the imprecatory Psalms. And I found myself finally doing what was commanded of me, which was to pray for my enemy. And I admitted to myself for the first time that I was actually thinking and feeling of that person as if they were a real enemy. You know, and I like to think of myself as not having any enemies, but that's not true. There are people who I just don't like in a real visceral way. And of course, that's not okay. I shouldn't have enemies. I should get along with everyone. That's part of the call of Jesus, is to be always reaching out towards people and bringing them close to the cross. So I decided to do what the Bible commanded, and I started praying for my enemy. And I experienced what I think Christians always experience and always should experience, which is that when you pray for your enemy, that person is looped back to you. God actually produces in you empathy and compassion for the person that you are alienated from, and pulls that person back in sort of a loop back towards love. So I think Christians have an extraordinary opportunity right now in the way that we think and talk about the enemy, the other. That person is never to be alienated from you so completely that you cease to pray for them, that you cease to reach out for them. So even within excommunication, if somebody is put out of the church, that person becomes an unbeliever. And Jesus is very clear how you treat the ungodly and the unbeliever, which is that you go out and you tell them about Jesus. You reach out to them with the good news of Jesus Christ and the cross. They're always looped back in to your worldview. You are not allowed to be tribal or within factions or cut anyone out. That's contrary to the cross of Christ. And I think it's useful to say, to admit, to be honest with yourself, that person is my enemy. That person has sinned against me or against somebody else. And then stop. And before you double down on your cancel, just stop and pray for that person in real terms, admitting your own feelings, being honest with yourself about the other person, and then asking for grace to ultimately forgive that person for whatever it is that they've done or whatever they've said. And be willing to absorb the pain of that within yourself and bring it to Jesus. So you get this very wonderful loop. And I think Christians could demonstrate this publicly on social media. We're not right now. We could demonstrate it in this next election cycle of forgiveness and love in the face of isolation and enmity. And I think God would glorify himself in that. While we were alienated from him, while we were sinners, he came to us and rescued us out of that pit of despair. And I think Christians should be quick to do that online, in person, whether anybody sees you doing it or not. That should be the call of the gospel.
Well, that's a good word as we head into, in 2020, fall election season and just continued brouhahas, whatever the daily brouhaha is on social media, to keep a biblical perspective about all of this. So finally, on a much lighter note, I want to ask some fun rapid fire questions for Anne. So Anne, you live in New York State. Bagel and cream cheese or a New York pizza?
Bagel and cream cheese.
Passenger or driver?
I love to drive. I would much rather drive. Yes. A stick.
Wow. Online shopping or shopping in a store?
That's a hard one. I think I prefer to shop in a store, and I've missed that the last many months. I think I'm more efficient in a store than online.
Paper plates and plasticware or actual plates and silverware?
Actual plates and silverware, which I take when I go camping. I take real dishes when I go camping.
Wow, that is very unusual. And especially, I know your family's bigger, so actual plates and silverware means somebody's doing a lot of dishes.
We boil the water in the wilderness, and we sit over a tub and wash our dishes by hand.
Wow. Well, thanks, Anne, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest has been Anne Kennedy, who has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal called Cancel Culture and the Gospel, Where Can You Go When the Whole World is Against You? And you can read her article for free online at our website, equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Anagraph, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. And please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, and please rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others see our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Anagraph, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.